and welcome to Juno Afternoon on this fine, beautiful, sunny Thursday, April 4th. My name's Shona Strausser, and I'm lucky to be here today, so it's my first go-around, so cut me some slack. But I would like to tell you, up on Juno Afternoon this afternoon, we have Kyle Pickett here from the Juno Symphony. We're very excited to speak with him. We'll also hear about the next month's Maritime Festival, always something wonderful. I'd like to catch up with Jesse Post and Sean Blumenschein there. We'll hear about the Raining Colors Triathlon, up and coming here pretty soon. And then, of course, every Thursday, we hear from Nancy DeCherney with Arth Up. So we're very excited to bring you that here on fine Juno Afternoon. Today, sunny, locally windy, highs around 43. The northeast wind 15 miles to 25 miles per hour, so it's a little bit windy out there. Tonight, mostly clear. Friday, increasing clouds. And Friday night, hey, it looks like some snow is likely. And before we get started with Juno Afternoon, we hear from Kyle Pickett. We're going to go ahead and give you some of my favorite national Native news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Two aluminum companies will pay millions of dollars to restore habitat they polluted near the Akwesasne Mohawk Reservation in New York, North Country Public Radio's David Summerstein reports.
For decades, until the 1970s, Alcoa and Reynolds Metals released cancer-causing PCBs into the St. Lawrence River, just upriver from the Akwesasne Mohawk Reservation. Barbara Tarbell works for the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe's Environment Division. She says the toxic chemicals destroyed a way of life for the Mohawk people.
When we are so directly linked to the natural resources, through our traditional activities such as fishing, hunting, trapping, when contamination became known, those activities were severed here, causing, you know, drastic changes in our community.
Tarbell says the settlement is unique because it addresses that cultural loss. More than $8 million will fund educational programs to pass on the Mohawk language, as well as medicinal and other traditional teachings to younger generations. Another $10 million will fund wetland restoration and improving habitat for fish, birds, and wildlife on the St. Lawrence and its tributaries. For National Native News, I'm David Summerstein in Canton, New York.
A nearly 500-mile run from Oklahoma to New Mexico is commemorating the release of Apache prisoners of war. It's been 100 years since they were freed. KUNM's Tristan Autone reports.
In 1886, Geronimo and other Apache warriors negotiated terms to lay down their arms and stop fighting the federal government. As a result, over 500 Apache men, women, and children were arrested and held for 27 years as prisoners of war in Florida, Pennsylvania, Alabama, and Oklahoma. On April 4, 1913, 187 Chiricahua began the journey back from Fort Sill, Oklahoma to New Mexico, while another 78 stayed behind.
We have an Apache word. It says, "Itarahinda." What that means is we're still alive as Chiricahuas Apaches.
Freddie Catazzini is the tribal administrator for the Mescalero Apache. He says Chiricahua Freedom Runners left Oklahoma Monday and will travel through Texas and into New Mexico.
We're expecting them to come in on Friday. So we're encouraging all of our neighbors from the different cities to be here with us. We would like to welcome them to the homelands of the Mescalero Apache people.
On Friday, a centennial parade will take place, followed by a traditional feast and ceremony Saturday. Catazzini also says from now on, the first Friday of every April will be a tribal holiday in remembrance of the event. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
Students demonstrated their skills at a native language fair this week in Norman, Oklahoma. They competed in categories like spoken language and song. As KGOU's Susan Shannon reports, an organizer says 900 students participated this year, representing 45 languages.
Dr. Mary Lynn, Associate Curator for Native Languages at the Sam Noble Museum of Natural History in Norman, Oklahoma, has been one of the driving forces behind the Native American Youth Language Fair.
When I first started working in Oklahoma in the early 1990s, the language teachers, that was their biggest concern, that the children did not want to learn the language. They felt that there wasn't the interest with the youth. I don't think that's a problem at all. It's like this big snowball rolling down the hill, and it's so big now, I don't think it can be stopped. And it's because of the children. It's because of the youth. If they want to learn the language, they are going to learn it. They're going to find ways to learn it.
For the 2014 Language Fair, a new category will be introduced, skateboard art with native language in it. A traveling exhibit of skateboard art from the National Museum of the American Indian will be there at the fair. For National Native News, I'm Susan Shannon in Norman, Oklahoma.
On this day in 1981, some American Indian Movement members founded Yellow Thunder Camp on federal land in South Dakota. It was an effort to reclaim the Black Hills. AIM members wanted it to become a permanent site but were denied a permit. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for National Native News comes from the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
To Juneau Afternoon. We are in the studio with Kyle Pickett. Kyle, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so it's really exciting. You all are in your 50th anniversary season.
This is a big concert and a big year for the Juneau Symphony.
Great. So how's it been going so far this 50th year?
Oh, it's been a really great year. The orchestra's playing better than ever. We've had great turnout, lots of good concerts. You know, we opened with the Firebird and the Appalachian Spring concert. We've had a couple chamber concerts. We've had some really neat events. We had a wine tasting that John DeTourney did last week, and we've had a gourmet event. So it's been a very full year for the Juneau Symphony, but the actual 50th anniversary is this month, April of 2013 is the 50th anniversary month of the Juneau Symphony.
That's just incredible that you guys have been around and bringing us great music for so long. So can you tell us about this upcoming concert? Because you're giving the people the goods here.
We're giving the people the goods. Yeah. What do you want to hear for the 50th anniversary? You want to hear Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. You want to hear the Ode to Joy, and that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about it. It's going to be a spectacular concert. For those who don't know, someone pointed out to me the Ode to Joy is what they used in Sister Act with Whoopi Goldberg. So it does have a real cultural resonance here. No, it's everybody knows the Ode to Joy, this symphony is just one of the all-time great works of art in the Western world. You know, it's like Henry V and Beethoven 9. You know,
totally. Everybody knows it. Yeah.
And not only that, it's a huge production. So we have the full orchestra, so, 70-ish players on stage. Plus we have a chorus of 100, and I think we're about 105.
Wow.
Yeah, 105 singers. So that's the symphony chorus. That's people who sing in the Bach Society. That's the JDHS High School Choir joining us. A lot of people.
Oh, the JDHS High School Choir is coming too.
Yeah, I'm very excited. That's the first time they've joined us on a performance.
Who's directing the choir?
And that's Rich Moore, who does the JDHS. And then Todd Hunt has done the preparation for the symphony chorus for this concert. And then we have four soloists, and I went with local soloists. So we've got Philippe Damerval is our bass.
Great.
And Brett Crawford is our tenor, and Missouri Smythe is our mezzo-soprano soloist, Wayne is our soprano soloist. So all familiar.
So definitely some
people.
Juno favorites.
This is
on
a Juno celebration.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah.
That's incredible.
And tickets are selling fast. We are on track. I think we've probably already broken our record for pre-sale for tickets. So don't hesitate. I mean, get your tickets now.
Yeah, so where? So what are the dates again for this performance?
So the concerts are Saturday night at 8 o'clock and Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. They're both at JDHS in the auditorium.
Great.
And there are a couple things about it that, that people should know. I give a pre-concert talk an hour before each show. So
what will you be covering in that pre-show?
Yeah, I talk, you know, it's my traditional pre-concert talk, and I try to keep it entertaining and informational without being, you know, lecture-like or boring. If I can try, if I can help it. Unfortunately, for Beethoven 9, there's so much to talk about. There's so many interesting things about that piece and about the composer of it. I talk, you know, a little bit about the history and a little bit about the personalities involved, and then I also try to talk a little bit about what we are thinking about as an ensemble as we play it. And give a little bit of the inside scoop on you know what we're doing artistically and technically to do the show and
right
and so that's an hour before, so that'll be 7 o'clock on Saturday night and 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon.
Oh great, both
and
shows
then, and both shows, and then there's also a big community reception after the Saturday night show, cake and punch and kind of thing for the whole audience and you know all the performers. It's your chance to, you know, talk to the musicians on stage, you know, from the stage, and we'll, you know, all be out in the commons at the high school, and so it's a big celebration. It really is a big deal. 50 years is a big deal.
50 years is a huge deal. It's just one of those ones that you got to go all out for. So speaking of going all out for, do you have, you know, I know Ode to Joy is going all out. Do you have any kind of special?
You know, the thing about the thing about this piece. So this is the only piece on the program, the Ninth Symphony, and it's a long symphony. It's you know, little known fact that the length of the CD was set because when Sony, you know, they were the inventors of the CD, and they said, okay, we've got to make it at least long enough to put one complete Beethoven 9 symphony on it without having to change CDs.
So they kind of set the bar
they
for all
set
music
the bar
to follow.
For all, exactly. I mean, any album recorded since 1985 has been affected by Beethoven 9 and the length of that piece. And so we decided that's how long an album should be.
Wow, that's great.
And it's, you know, what I say to people is it's a journey in music. And, you know, you all know the Ode to Joy. I mean, everybody knows da-da-da-da-dee-da-da, right? Everybody knows the Ode to
Joy. Everybody knows it, yeah.
But the journey to get there is a remarkable one. And it starts, you know, Beethoven weaves this whole thing out of a musical representation of chaos that is coming to order, and then it ends, you know, it makes its way through, you know, an hour's worth of music until you get to this Ode to Joy. And that's one of the things that's just remarkable about live performance, is that, you know, all of us like the Ode to Joy. And so you could take your CD or you can, you know, dial up Spotify or YouTube and you can listen to the Ode to Joy.
Ode to Joy all day long if you want.
Yeah, right. But it's the experience of getting there that actually makes it so much more powerful. That moment when the choir just opens up, you know, it's just this amazing moment. And getting there is the important part of that process. And of course, the other thing is you're doing it. You're sitting in a theater. You're surrounded by your friends, your fellow members of your community. You're watching your own community orchestra do it. You're watching 100 singers, all from your community. You know, all told, after this weekend is done, you know, there'll have been, you know, 2,000 people in Juneau who have seen or performed the Beethoven 9. Transpose that percentage onto New York City, you know, and you'd have like a million people to come see it to make it, you know, that same impact.
So have you, I'm sure everybody's been in the same room already so
we
far.
Have.
And what was that first experience like, just hearing everybody? What's the power behind it? Because I know, you know, from performing that it's
pretty
amazing.
Magical.
Yeah.
You know, the rehearsal process is as you know, it's rigorous. It's a lot of work. It's very intense, and the way the symphony rehearses, you know, we do a very compact rehearsal period, you know, just over a couple weeks, a bunch of rehearsals in a couple weeks, and we actually added a couple rehearsals to this set, just because it's such a big piece.
Yeah, huge.
And so in that rehearsal, you know, the players are working on really perfecting and sort of achieving this level of artistry that we're working toward. And that first moment was actually Monday night when we brought the chorus and the orchestra together. And we perform for the audience, but in that rehearsal, we're kind of doing it for ourselves. And so that moment when it all comes together and you hear all of that beautiful sound and how powerful it is. It's a very moving moment. I mean, that
there's a reason it's so huge.
There's a reason it's so huge. Yeah. There's a reason. Look, this piece. You know, when World War II ends, what are you going to play? You're going to play Beethoven 9.
Right.
When the Berlin Wall goes down, what do? You play Beethoven 9.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your symphony turns 50, you play Beethoven. It's a celebratory, ceremonial mm-hmm. kind of piece.
Piece, right.
And it really brings people together. And, of course, it has a wonderful message, too. I mean, there's actually a text, and the text is about the brotherhood of mankind. And so it's entirely upbeat. It's entirely positive and joyful,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a magnificent piece of music.
Great. So, you know, I don't want to take this opportunity to not mention forward thinking. So you're hitting your big 50th year with the Juno
yeah.
Symphony, and what a huge milestone. And
yeah.
the community's so thankful to have you all here and all the great work that you do. And so what's looking forward into 51? Is there any kind of little tidbits?
Well,
you know,
there are, but there's actually more of 50. And I should mention a couple things.
Oh, fabulous. Please do.
We have we have another full concert after this, which is actually one that I've been looking forward to so much. We're having a Motown concert.
Our
June Pops. It's in Centennial Hall. There'll be dancing. We're bringing up this great group. They're called Spectrum. They're a Motown, you know, like a Four Tops
Motown
tribute
hits,
group.
Folks.
They're so good. I've worked with them before, and
okay.
I have to tell you, it was one of the most fun concerts I've ever done, and I think it's going to be one of the most fun concerts the Juno Symphony has ever done. That's in June.
Okay.
That's in our normal Pops slot. We have a couple more chamber music concerts in April. Candice Lavolsi, who's our harpist, who comes in from out of town,
yeah.
is teaming up with Bill Pollock, our principal horn player, and mezzo-soprano Beth Madsen-Bradford, who came and sang Carmen for us a few years ago, is coming back, and they're volunteering their time and efforts to do a really beautiful chamber concert that I think is the first night will be out at the Shrine,
oh.
and that'll be pretty neat.
Yeah.
And then in June, after the Motown, our own Franz Felkel is coming back to town from Fairbanks, and he's going to do a violin concert with Alexander Tutnov, the pianist, Russian pianist, who has been coming to Juno doing the masterclass series. And so those will both be really neat events.
Well, great. So it sounds like we've got a full docket
still to
go.
We're having a fun run. We're having a barbecue. I mean, there's a lot going on.
There's plenty of celebration. So what's the website where people can get more information about what's going on?
JunoSymphony.org. So
that's
all
fabulous.
One word, JunoSymphony.org. And all of the information on this season is on there.
Yeah,
and then,
please help the Juno Symphony celebrate their 50th year. You can check that out at JunoSymphony.org. And then this weekend, if you want to give us those dates
yeah.
and times one more time.
So Saturday night, 8 o'clock at JDHS with a pre-concert talk 1 hour before at 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock matinee at JDHS also.
Perfect.
With a talk at 2 o'clock.
2 p.m.
We're playing Beethoven's Ninth Symphony with, you know, about 200 people on stage. And the last thing I would say about it is if you haven't heard it live, or even if you have, you've got to know there's no experience like hearing this piece live.
Yeah.
It's just so powerful.
Bone chilling.
It is bone chilling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So check that out this weekend. That's the Juno Symphony, and that shows this Beethoven's Nights this Saturday and this Sunday. You can get more information on their website. Thank you so much, Kyle Picker, for coming
Thanks,
in.
Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on your 50th
Thank you very
year.
Much.
And we'll go back into here to hear some more of Beethoven's Ninth. And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. And we've got a little sea of love. And speaking of sea of love, we're here with Jesse Post and Sean Blumenschein. Thanks so much for coming to Juno Afternoon.
Thanks,
Thank
Shana.
You for having us.
Yeah, and we're here to actually talk about one of my favorite but kind of new events, actually, the Maritime Festival. So what's going on with the Maritime Festival this year?
Well, this is actually the fourth annual Maritime Festival. It's scheduled for Sunday, May 19th at Marine Park, and the purpose is to celebrate Juneau's maritime history, culture, and commerce.
So great. So and who's behind all of this? Because I know it's a huge event, right? So
it is, and it's very much a community event. JDC and Jesse here lead. They're the organization that heads the event and puts it on.
Okay.
But it has a lot of involvement from the community members.
Great. So and what are your roles in this event here?
Well, I work at the Juneau Economic Development Council, like Sean said, and I am kind of the lead on organizing the festival. But like Sean said, this is, you know, there's so many partnerships and sponsorship and just community involvement that takes place. So really, my role is kind of just working together with a planning committee and specifically a smaller community steering committee we created this year, which Sean is a part of.
Yeah, so I sit on the steering committee, and I'm a community member, and I represent Sea Alaska and Haunee. We've been sponsors for the festival since its inception.
I was going to say, I think I played there the first year, and I think they're, yeah.
Absolutely. We've been a sponsor every year that it's been in existence.
Great.
You know, maritime is something that is important to us, Haunee specifically, because of its roots, the Maritime's roots in Juneau, and our involvement in mariculture in Southeast Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
So we felt it was an appropriate fit for us to stand behind.
Yeah, of course. So can you, before we kind of dive into some more questions in here, can I get some nuts and bolts as far as what day is the Maritime Festival?
Yeah, it's scheduled for Sunday, May 19th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Marine Park down on the waterfront there.
Okay, and so what are some of the great things that people can look forward to at the Maritime Festival?
Well, there's so many different components to this festival. So much going on. First of all, every year we've had a welcoming ceremony, and One People Canoe Society has always canoed across the channel and perform a cultural dance. It's a really great way to kickstart the event. Mm-hmm. There's entertainment all day. We have bands this year. Sean, you might want to mention our entertainment piece.
Right, our new entertainment piece. We're going to have a maritime-themed fashion show.
Oh, well, what is that?
Right. The idea is and we're still in the process of working out all of our partnerships in that, but the idea is to have businesses from around town participate and come up with the lineup as far as the clothing and for the fashion show. And we've reached out to Manuel with Chocos.
Fabulous.
Hernandez, right?
And Donna.
And yeah, exactly, to help coordinate and organize the fashion show for us.
Oh,
and
that's perfect for that. Yeah,
oh,
great.
Right.
Great.
Absolutely.
So what kind of fashions are you expecting? I mean, I think of wearable art and the blue muscle dress from a Kathy Cartridge a
few
years ago.
Everyone keeps talking about that. That's the one that keeps coming up, is that blue muscle dress. Even in our steering committee meetings, it was mentioned.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, so far, like I said, we're early in the planning stages of it, but we've got like Janae, which is the gift shop under Sea Alaska Heritage Institute.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to participate, and talking with them, it sounds like they've got some sea otter pelt clothing that they're making that they're going to be displaying for the fashion show.
Fabulous! So, are you going to runway it? Is that how it's going to be?
Yeah, we're working out details and all those. You know, specifics on how the music's going to work with, you know, all these different pieces and elements, but with a maritime theme. We also have, you know, we'll have a beer garden again from Alaska, thanks to Alaska Brewery, a variety of food vendors. We've got lots of contests going on. We've got tug of war new this year. We've got fish toast races.
Say that one again.
Fish tote races, like the big square, tippy kind
of. Yeah, the toast, yeah.
Yeah.
So you're just going to race them down the dock there and see who. Full
yeah,
of fish?
Yeah. We've seen that at some other festivals, and it looks like a lot of fun. So
it does sound like a lot of fun.
We also have a fillet contest, which we added last year, and that was a great highlight and really showcased the processor skills and generated some excitement. We this year we're adding a smoked salmon contest. The public can also can contribute marinades for a marinade contest and things like that. Yeah, there's just so much. We've got kids' activities lined up, dye pack, touch tank, and what
That's
else?
Always a popular event.
Vessel tours, boat
yeah, what
building.
What vessels are going to be down there? That's some of the. I mean, those are some of the highlights of actually the festival. Is just people getting to walk on the boats and seeing what's going on. So who's going to be down there?
Well, so far we have a fishing vessel lined up, the Kodiak King. The Coast Guard will definitely have some presence there with one of their vessels. I think we're working on some more details with, you know, tugboats, sailboats. I think the sailing club will be there. So those details are still being lined up. But there's always been a great lineup with boats and vessels.
Yeah, yeah. So what other kind of, so you've got this fashion show, you've got boats. I mean, really, what more do you want? Yeah, what music-wise, what do you have going on?
Well, I think we have a couple. We're lining up some bands. I think we have Fire on McGinnis will be playing, and then I think we're kind of working on some more details for that. But definitely there will be entertainment all day long. We're also trying to highlight maritime history. So the Alaska State Museum has always provided some great historical displays and photos. It's Alaska Marine Highway's 50th anniversary, so we're helping them celebrate that. That big anniversary there.
Right. It's just a huge, you know, we were just talking to Kyle Pickett actually about the Symphony's 50th, and now it's Alaska Marine Highway 50th. So yeah, how other ways are you kind of connecting with Alaska Marine Highway? Because I think that's just huge right now for us, you know.
We've had some communication with them. Obviously, I don't think they can bring in a big ferry down to the Marine Park area.
We did try that, though.
Right, of course.
that would have been great. But we're working with them. I know they have their documentary about their 50 years in service. So, you know, just trying to get some of that at the festival and, yeah, just helping them kind of promote their all the work they've done over the past 50 years for Southeast Alaska.
Yeah, great. So what is the, you know, I remember from the very first year, and this event does happen rain or shine for sure.
Yes.
We learned that last year.
So, great. Well, because I remember a couple of years it was super sunny and beautiful, and we're like, oh, we love
first
it.
First 2 years were amazing.
Yeah.
We're keeping our fingers crossed for this year. So,
yeah. Right. So, you know, of course, Juneau's entrenched in maritime culture, and I'm wondering, what was the impetus, you know? So whose brainchild, or how did this come about, and why?
Well, the Juneau Economic Development Council really spearheaded this 4 years ago, and because the maritime industry is such a big part of our economy. Our economy is really just fueled by the maritime industry. I mean, transportation, food, employment is huge. We're a coastal community, and JADC really wanted to, you know, we understand that value, but we really wanted the community to realize that and have an appreciation and a better understanding of how that plays a huge role economically and just how many people are connected with the ocean.
Yeah, and it's pretty much just everybody, right?
Well, even just sitting around the committee table, you know, we had a meeting earlier today, and I was just really the meeting today was huge. It was, I mean, the presence was large, and just so many industries and organizations represented, even just individual community members who participate in the planning of this event.
Mm-hmm. So what are some, I know you're looking forward to the fashion show, so what are some of the big things that people absolutely do not want to miss?
Well, man, I feel like I named a lot of them, but like I said, we've got beer garden.
do not want to miss the beer garden.
Right.
Did we mention there's a beer garden?
Yeah, no, there's also, we get fish that's donated from Alaska Seafood Marketing, Taku Smokeries. They've donated fish in the past, and we've been giving out small samples. This year we'll probably be asking for donations. But it's just a chance for people to really get on board a vessel. I think a lot of people have never really been on a fishing vessel, a tugboat, you know, and that they gives them a chance to do that. And just really, enjoy what's
we really are going to have a variety of contests going on, too. Like she mentioned, a marinade contest, and we've been talking about a smoked salmon you know, some races, the tug of war. And there, I mean, there's going to be quite a bit of events going on, just kind of all over. Mm-hmm. And you know, definitely won't be a dull moment. As far as that goes. There's so many moving parts to this festival. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, that's fabulous. Can you, so that date one more time for us?
Yeah. Fourth Annual Juno Maritime Festival is this Sunday, May 19th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m.
That's right. So this is a free event. It's open to the public. You know, I've been every year. It's just a blast. It's just really fun. It's a great way to connect with your community. And, of course, the number one thing, connect with the water, you know.
Right.
So thank you so much, Jesse and Sean, for coming in today. And all the best.
Pleasure.
I will pray for some sun for you.
Yeah, we need all that.
Crossed,
we need all
right?
that.
Yep. Positive vibrations our direction.
Yes. Sun, right. sun, sun.
And this is Juno Afternoon. It's sunny outside today, speaking of. And we're looking at mostly clear for tonight. And tomorrow we've got increasing clouds. Friday night is snow likely. Saturday, rain and snow coming. So we still got a little snow there in the forecast. Thanks so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. And here's Garrison Keillor with today's Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 4th of April, 2013. It was on this day in 1818, Congress decided the flag of the United States would consist of 13 red and white stripes and 20 stars with a new star to be added for each new state. It's the birthday of the novelist and memoirist and screenwriter Marguerite Duras, born in a little village in French Indochina near what is now Saigon in 1914. Parents were teachers. Her dad became ill. He died. Dumas had an impoverished, miserable childhood in which she was abused by her mother and her brother. And when she was a teenager, she became lovers with a wealthy, older Chinese man whom she met on a ferry boat between Sa Dec and Saigon. She wrote about him in her books The Sea Wall, North China Lover, and The Lover, which was published in 1984. It's the birthday of Maya Angelou, born Marguerite Ann Johnson, St. Louis, 1928, whose memoir I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings was a big bestseller in 1969, a book that begins, "When I was three and Bailey four, we had arrived in the musty little town wearing tags on our wrists, which instructed to whom it may concern that we were Marguerite and Bailey Johnson, Jr. from Long Beach, en route to Stamps, Arkansas, care of Mrs. Annie Henderson. Our parents had decided to put an end to their calamitous marriage, and father shipped us home to his mother." It was on this day in 1968 Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, standing on the balcony of his room on the second floor of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis at 6:01 in the evening. He'd gone to Memphis to support a strike by black sanitation workers, and the night before he'd given a speech in the Masonic Temple in Memphis in which he said, "I just want to do God's will. I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land." And it's the birthday of the blues great Muddy Waters, born McKinley Morganfield in Rolling Fork, Mississippi, 1915. Taught himself to play harmonica and guitar, played on the south side of Chicago in bars, and in 1950, he made his first recording for Chess Records, a tune called Rolling Stone. Here's a poem for today by Christina Rossetti, entitled Uphill. Does the road wind uphill all the way? Yes, to the very end. Will the day's journey take the whole long day? From morn to night, my friend. But is there for the night a resting place, a roof for when the slow dark hours begin? May not the darkness hide it from my face. You cannot miss that inn. Shall I meet other wayfarers at night? Those who have gone before. Then must I knock or call when just in sight? They will not keep you waiting at that door. Shall I find comfort, travel sore and weak? Of labor you shall find the sum. Will there be beds for me and all who seek? Yea, beds for all who come. Uphill, a poem by Christina Rossetti. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Kathy Roach and Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Registration is now open for the 2013 Business of Clean Energy in Alaska Conference, May 2nd and 3rd, at the Denali Center in Anchorage. This annual conference offers participants an opportunity to network with national industry experts and learn the latest on policies, programs, and projects in the clean energy industry. Discounts are offered to those who register by March 29. More information at bceaconference.com or 929-7770. This message is sponsored by REAP.
The Juno Photo Group is a diverse assemblage of local enthusiasts, professional and amateur, who share a love of photography. The group holds regular meetings to share photo tips, ideas, and information. And every day of the year, JPG members are out and about, rain or shine, taking photos of Juno and elsewhere. During the April 1st Friday event, JPG members will have a photo exhibit in two locations, the K2 Studios from 4:30 to 6 and at 228 Seward Street from 4:30 to 7. Light refreshments will be provided at both venues. Photos at K2 will be available for viewing the entire month of April.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Shona, and I'm so lucky that I get to be here on Thursdays with Arts Up with Nancy DeCherney. Nancy,
hey,
thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
What a gorgeous day.
Oh, it's awesome.
How much fun. So
what's up?
Well, this is First Friday week, so
that's packed.
Well, yeah, it's packed. What week isn't, but this one's particularly bad.
Or good.
Okay, yeah. Tonight, there's a Escape Fire, the Fight to Rescue American Healthcare. There's a film screening down at the Hangar Ballroom.
Oh, wow.
That's this evening at 6.
Okay.
And there is actually at 5:30 a Department of Transportation and Public Facilities public meeting on Egan Drive improvements. So go there. That's at Centennial Hall. Salsa dancing out at the Rec Center at 7. And then on First Friday, it starts usually around 4:30. We have quite the lineup. You just heard that the JPG is going to be here, the Juno Photography Group is going to be here, and another place. So we always recommend that you start at our place because you get these cute flyers which tell you everywhere to go.
It tells you everywhere to go, which is crucial.
It's handy because there's a lot of places to go. The Alaska State Museum is opening two wonderful shows, Playing with Lightning, Raven's Tale Weavings by Kay Field Parker. Raven's Tale is really interesting stuff if you aren't familiar. If you go to Wearable Art, you've seen them because
Catherine
always does
Griffin,
them.
Yes.
But anyway, learn about those and see all the stuff that Kay does. Rainforest Warriors, Clinket Armor by Carver Tommy Joseph will be over there. And I think he's going to do a little talk. I'm not really sure about that.
Okay.
But so while you're there and then while you're in this neighborhood, stop in here because they have the JPG photographs on the wall. They're fabulous. Some of them doesn't look like photography. It looks like paintings or
they
something.
They do
it's
look
beautiful.
Like paintings. Yeah, they're printed
beautiful.
Beautifully too.
So then you go on downtown at the Wolfsman Building is where the other photos are going to be with them. Also the Whale's Tail will be there with their little the little whale. The baby whale is going to be there. And you can get more information about where they're at with that project. And it is coming along. It's pretty amazing. Across the street at the Canvas, it is a show about brain injury information, and mm-hmm. then Reach Artists Gallery show and a theatrical performance, I believe. The Rookery will have artwork from Thunder Mountain and Juno Douglas High School student art. That's their senior art student exhibit.
Yeah, and I checked that out, actually, last year about the same time, and it uh-huh. was just, it was mind-blowing.
It's amazing what kids can do.
Those kids.
Kids today.
Exactly.
Okay, and then you get on to Front Street, and Alaska Robotics has work by Scott C. and Kate Deaton. And Annie Kales has Johnny Ellis Ivory.
Ooh.
Jewelry him. I have to make a stop in there. I think Mother's Day is coming, right?
It is, right? Wink,
him.
Wink, nudge, nudge.
Anybody listening?
Yeah.
Okay. And then we have a new one that's opening up on 3rd Street, Northern Oasis Wellness Spa. It's their grand opening reception.
Oh.
This is a new sauna and massage studio, and they will have photography by Char Fox. And
oh,
she's another wonderful
great.
Photographer here in town.
That's a win-win.
Yeah, yeah.
Photography and massage.
Yes. Well, wait a minute.
Oh, wait.
Enough of that.
Yeah.
Okay, South Franklin Street, the Kodiak Coat Company is going to be open. Dresses and Dragons, hand-painted silk dresses and original art.
Ooh.
Don't you think we need to go there?
Yes.
Yes, and the Alaskan Brewing Company, about this time you're going to need a little light refreshment. They will be open with the summer ale and mm-hmm. live music by Liz Snyder and friends.
Oh, great. Liz Snyder's mm-hmm. fabulous. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Bear's Lair is open. It's their 17th anniversary of that store.
That place has been open 17 years.
Yeah, who knew?
Wow.
20% off store-wide. So
what a deal.
Yeah, what a deal. And also, Fairweather Prints will be open with new work by Patrice Shook. She's a painter from, I think, maybe Homer. I'm not really certain, but she's a new printmaker and painter that they're featuring. And at the artist gallery, it is, I think, photography by Cam Burns.
Mm-hmm.
And Rockwell will have John Hutchins photography, and Sam Burroughs and Magic Mike will be playing the blues until 9 p.m., and then they go someplace else.
And play some more blues.
Yes. Now, the Franklin Street Gallery, which I thought was going to be closed, apparently is open through April, and they are having Salon de Juno. So, and Dan Hobson will be doing classical guitar, and I think they have a wine tasting.
Oh, great. Yeah, I thought they were done.
Me too.
But they're not.
Right,
fabulous.
See, like redo. Okay. Well, they were so wonderful, so we have to have
glad.
Them open. Yeah, so Vanity, which is also a new little salon, which is sort of up just kitty corner up from the Baranoff, will be doing a benefit for the Gastineau Humane Society, and they have photos by Brianne Meacham and animal art. Okay, so that's just the first bit of First Friday.
That's just one,
one small piece.
That's a couple hours.
Yeah, yeah. At 6 p.m., it's the UAS annual alumni spring auction and dinner, which is a fundraiser for the scholarships. That's out at the Eakin Library. You can get tickets by calling out there. Wizard of Oz opens.
Yay!
That it's going to run 2 weekends, I think. It's Friday night and then Saturday night. The Juno folk dancers have brought Ari Levitt to town, and he's going to be doing all kinds of, he or she, I'm not sure which, doing all sorts of workshops and stuff in the Rockwell, roll up the rugs, swing dancing, I mean, all sorts of stuff all weekend long, and you can get more information on their website. Irene Mueller and band with Sammy Burroughs will be out at the Rec Center. How can he be in two places at once?
I'm glad he's working it out.
We caught it. Okay, there's live music at 9 p.m. with Sammy Burroughs and Magic Mike doing the harmonica blues at Rockwell, which is after wherever they were before.
I think Irene,
Yeah, somewhere. Sit in with the band with Jason Caputo. It is the Chicken Summit on Saturday.
Oh, yes.
I am giving them best poster. They have the best poster. It is, I can't remember what their little quote is this month, but it's really cute. It's the travel fair out at Nugget Mall, which mm-hmm. is always lots of stuff. They're giving away things, and you can find out what to do with all of your family and friends when they come to visit, take them places, find out what's going on this summer. The first cruise ship comes in very soon,
It's super soon.
May
2nd. Right around the corner.
Yeah, so get ready. 10 a.m. to 3, it is the 4th Annual Alaska Women's Expo with a keynote speaker, Joe Peckham. And it's at Centennial Hall, and it's free. They also have the 1st Annual Bartlett Beginnings Family Art Exhibit. That's going to be going on over there, too. So give that a shot. And they'll be doing belly dancing at 11:30. What the heck? At noon, it is Bowl for Kids' Sake, everybody's favorite.
That's right. Fundraiser.
Yes. The lecture with Tommy Joseph is at 2 p.m. on Saturday over at the State Museum about Tlingit armor. And there is also a wonderful workshop by Susie Gregg Fowler, writing and illustrating books for young people. That's at 2 p.m. at the Downtown Library, and that, too, is free. Two showings of The Wizard of Oz at 2 and 7. And let's see, it is, you've been talking about it, okay. I was listening to an awful version by Cats. Let's not ever do that.
You will not get that this weekend.
But people, we are running out of tickets for this, and it is going to be an amazing, there's a reason why this piece of music is so famous.
Yeah. We were just talking to Kyle Pickett about it, and it's the music that you know and more.
And need. So it's going to blow your socks off. And we are running out of tickets for the Saturday show. There are lots for Sunday. Be sure to don't miss this. At 9:15 is the improv first Saturday thing that goes on over at Goldtown. Let's see, the Bowl-a-thon, Canvas Empty Bowls fundraiser for the Glory Hole, is on Sunday at 10. We have a ski race that's the last one of the season. Seems like it'd have to be rollerblades.
Right.
I mean, you know, come on.
It looks like fresh snow's in the forecast tomorrow, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Keep that to yourself. 3 p.m. is your second opportunity to hear the Beethoven 9 Ode to Joy. And there's tap dancing at 6 p.m. Folk Festival.
Folk Festival.
You can tell it's here because the crocuses are up.
That's
the way we do that. But also on Monday at 7 p.m., not only does Folk Festival begin, but we have Native Jazz Quartet Release Tour 2013, Ed Littlefield and his jazz quartet.
Saw that show last year. Just blew me away.
Amazing. It's wonderful music. It's going to be at the Jack, and do come to that if you can. On Tuesday is the Douglas Community Garden Pottery. Don't miss that at 3 p.m. over at the library. And then it's Folk Festival.
And it's Folk Fest, friends.
Yeah,
the street cleaners are out. That's how I street cleaners, crocuses, that's what we've got going on.
Yeah, goats on the mountain.
Well,
here
of
we
course,
go.
Once again, and it's always a pleasure, Nancy, thank you so much for filling us in on the wonderful things that are happening in our community.
Thank you, Shona. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Yellow is the color of my true love's hair in the morning. When we rise in the morning, when we rise, that's the time, that's the time I love the best. Blue's the color of the sky in the morning. When we rise in the morning, when we rise, that's the time I love the best. Green's the color of the sparkling corn in the morning, when we rise in the morning, when we rise. That's the time, I love the best.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon. And thanks so much for tuning in on this fine sunny day. And up next we have Jenny Summers. It's talking about the Raining Colors Triathlon. And this is so exciting to me because, well, I'll let Jenny talk to you about it. So, yeah, tell us about what's going on here, Jenny.
Hi, thanks for having me on. We appreciate it a lot.
Yeah.
So this is a 5K run. It's called the Raining Colors 5K. We're going to have it Sunday, April 21st, out at UAS, starting in the courtyard. We're going to start the race at noon.
Okay.
The race is going to benefit the Harborview Triathlon Club, which we started probably last fall.
So this is the Harborview Elementary Triathlon Club.
Yep, it's a group of 12 fourth and fifth graders. We're training with them right now to run their first sprint triathlon in May in Sitka.
That's incredible.
Yeah, we're really excited about it. We had the zombie run in the fall, which was a great fundraiser for us. And we're doing this Raining Colors 5K Sunday the 21st to benefit the triathlon club to help fund getting the kids to Sitka
and the students here.
The training. You know, we're using the Augustus Brown pool to train Tracy Rivera. We have to shout out to him. He's been awesome. He's a triathlon training coach in town, and he's been working with the kids. It's been great.
How awesome. So what are the kids, what are the lengths that the kids do?
It's a 500-meter swim.
Okay.
Off the top of my head, I can't remember what the bike is. It's about a 9-mile bike.
Okay.
And then a 3-mile run.
Wow.
So it's almost a sprint triathlon.
That's amazing. And so are they, and what kind of training goes into making this happen?
Well, it's a 10-week program.
Mm-hmm.
They've been swimming for 4 weeks, twice a week before school, so at 6:45. Actually 7-ish. The kids go and they swim for about 45 minutes, and then they go to school. This past week, we just started adding the run into it, so twice a week they swim and run. So they swim first for half an hour, run for a half an hour.
Uh-huh.
This is all before school. These kids are amazing. And then one day a week they just run. And then starting, I believe, next week, there's going to be a one day a week where they're running and biking. So it's a four days a week they're training.
And so they've been doing it for how many weeks now?
I would say 3 weeks.
Okay.
We skipped spring break, so it's been a month, but it's been 3 weeks of training.
And so they've been doing this, you know, in the weather and all the elements. And how are they feeling about it? Because, you know, it's gotta be. I mean, it's daunting for me, and I'm old, and you know, I'm wondering how do they feel about it? What's going through their brains right now?
Well, they have an endless amount of energy. The kids do, and they're great. A great teammates, and they're all, we just added the second component where they're running and swimming. And
that's amazing.
And they seem to be transitioning into that well. Everybody was very excited to do their first, it's called a brick, where you do more than two events. So they swam first.
Why do they call it a brick, do you know?
You know what? I don't. I have to ask Tracy about that. I'm sure I've read it somewhere, but because your legs feel like bricks.
Because you feel like bricks after you're done. Right?
Something like that. But so it's a great group of kids. We've had some incredible support from the community. And this Raining Colors 5K is the first, hopefully, annual race that we have. I'm going to tell you a little bit about it because it's not just a regular 5K. So it's a 5K course out at UAS.
Okay.
At every 1K, so about every mile, you're going to get doused with a powder, a colored powder. And it's food-grade cornstarch that's been dyed with vegetable dye. So you can eat it. You can inhale it. It can get in your eyes. It can get in your ears.
So
nothing's going to happen.
Nothing's going to happen. It's good.
Completely safe.
Okay.
100% biodegradable. So for those of you who are worried about the trails and stuff, it's going to wash away at the first rain.
Oh, wow.
And you're going to come out looking tie-dyed. And it's going to be a lot of fun. It's not a timed event. It's really designed to go out, get a team together, get a group of coworkers together, come out in costumes. You know, it's really going to be a lot of fun. And then at the end, there's going to be hopefully some music and some food and just kind of hanging out on a sunny Sunday afternoon is what we're hoping.
That's right, of course. So that's a really interesting idea that the powder, the colored powder.
Mm-hmm.
So have you seen this happen before? And
this is a huge race right now on the mainland.
Okay.
the Color Run is actually a trademarked run.
Oh, okay.
It's huge events. I was just in North Carolina, where I'm from, and they happened to be having one of these events in one of the towns that were near us. And it was 9,000-plus runners at this. It's a huge run. It was amazing.
Seems like it would just be a whole lot of fun, that you just get things tossed on you.
Yep.
And,
obviously, you know, we're going to do it kind of Juno style, so it's going to be a little bit, obviously, a lot smaller.
Right.
but we're going to try to make it as fun.
But super fun nonetheless.
Right.
Right.
I mean, Sunday the 21st, it'll be an afternoon. Bring your family out. It's a family event. Obviously, we're, you know, dealing with a bunch of school-aged kids. So we're not going to time anything, run, walk, get a group of people together. It is a trail run, so you're not going to be able to stroller.
Right.
Would be a kind of difficult. I'm not sure
how. Maybe not stroller friendly, kind of depending on your stroller, I guess.
Right. But it's going to be a great time. You're able to register at Pavitt's.
Okay.
At the Nugget Outfitter out at the mall.
Okay.
And then we just got it online at active.com.
Active.com?
Yep, active.com. And if you just type in Raining Colors, it'll come right up and you can register right there.
And do you have to register before the event? Can you register the day of?
You can register the day of the event starting at 11 a.m.
Okay.
And then the race will start at noon.
Oh, fabulous. And, you know, it's a great cause, helping to get Harborview Elementary school kids to Sitka to do their first triathlon. And that's just incredible. Can you tell me how the triathlon program got started and what was the impetus behind it?
Zach Stinson is the gym teacher mm-hmm. at Harborview. He, for years, has been running Marathon Club.
Yeah, Marathon Club,
of course. Every spring, you know, I think it's about 9 weeks before the end of school.
Yeah, it's cool. You see all the kids going up
running
and down.
Around
yep.
circles outside the school.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a triathlon last spring, a little mini one out at Thunder Mountain High School. And the kids loved it. And one of the other moms and I, Jeanette Lacey Dunn,
mm-hmm.
we kind of ran with it a little bit and thought it would be fun to challenge the kids to do something a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And we're both active people, and
mm-hmm.
we like that our kids are active. We're trying to promote a healthy lifestyle and helping kids learn that being active and being healthy isn't just something that you do every once in a while. It's kind of you live
lifelong,
it.
Lifelong, right.
Mm-hmm. It's lifelong, and you take mm-hmm. care of your body, and have exercise and activity can be fun. It doesn't have to be hard work.
Right.
Or it can be both,
hard work
and fun. So we kind of just got, we took that off and then it just kind of exploded and it got away from us a little bit. We did the zombie run in the fall,
mm-hmm.
which was great. We'll do that
Usually
one again.
Popular.
For sure. And then, we're just trying to have fun and be involved in our kids' lives and help other kids learn that, exercise and eating right is the right thing to do.
So do you see maybe, after this, after at Harborview, do you see this kind of expanding into, because, I see Girls on the Run, which fabulous program. Do you see this kind of program, the triathlon program going into the schools? Because, I feel like it's kind of prime for the course, especially with Michelle Obama's push for activity and young people.
We certainly would like to do this every year.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly would like to be able to take more than a dozen kids next year, or host one in Juneau maybe next year. So, I really do. I think that all it takes is a couple of people who are kind of dedicated and willing to work with the kids, and I think it's a great program, for any of the schools or any of the areas in town.
Great. So this is the event is happening April 21st. It's the Rainbow. Can you go ahead and fill
it's
us in?
It's the Raining Colors 5K.
The Raining Colors 5K, April
right.
21st. And what time does it start?
It's out at UAS. We'll start in the courtyard. Registration starts at 11, and then we'll start the race at noon.
Great. That sounds like a fabulous event, and it's benefiting young students from Harborview Elementary to go do their first triathlon over in Sitka. So get out and support this program. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
At night we ride the mansions of glory and suicide.
And thanks so much for listening to KTOO Juneau Afternoon. My name's Shona. It's been a pleasure here to be with you on this fine, fine sunny Thursday. Just want to give you a few announcements before we wrap up here. CECON will be conducting blasting operations in the Fish Creek Quarry on Fish Creek Road in North Douglas tomorrow between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. No traffic delay is expected, but just to be aware of that. And also coming up tomorrow on Juneau Afternoon, we have Katie Bosler talking about events at UAS. We'll talk about the UAS production of Marriage of Bet and Boo. We'll do the Saturday's Women Expo with keynote speaker Joe Packham. That's going to be really exciting. And then we'll talk about the Reach Actors performance at the Canvas. And this KTOO Juneau, we broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. Thank you so much for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon. We'll see you next week.
We can take action here in Connecticut, and we can make Connecticut towns and cities safer, and this bill does that.
States take the lead on gun laws, both strengthening and loosening them.
Today is Thursday, April 4th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.